Aaron.
Yep.
Yeah, and we have Aaron remote, and are going to take her regardless. Any citizens' comments? We have nobody in the room, nobody online. Minutes for correction or approval for February 16, 2022. Comments on the minutes? Take those as presented. New minutes? Admin 2022-14, budget report for February.
Yeah, there's nothing in particular that I wanted to highlight. If anybody has any questions, that's fine. Revenues continue to outperform expectations. We did get Christmas sales figures in a couple days ago. So those are, again, off report. So they'll be next month. It was the highest month we've ever had and was even higher than it was in 2020, despite the fact, or 2021, despite the fact that in 2021 we had large numbers, and then in 2020. In 2021, we saw a shift where the November purchases were actually way up too. So people continued to buy holiday gifts in November and December, and that's being reflected in our sales tax revenues.
Does anybody have any questions on the report? Okay,
balance of $14,992,735. Year-to-date revenues of $48,965,125. Year-to-date expenses of $35,303,850 for a projected ending fund balance of $28,654,010.
Any questions or comments? All right, that's informational. Next item, admin 2016, website report for February 2022.
The website reports in your packet. We are exclusively on Google Analytics now. Tyvek, which is our previous analytic group through our website, is no longer supported. So you see things have fallen off a little bit on what we can capture on the back end. But we are performing really well. We are scheduled to do a website refresh at the end of this calendar year. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to
answer. Any questions? Mm-hmm. Aaron, with the website refresh, is that a contractually prepaid still?
It sure is.
Mm-hmm.
And then do we have one more of those, or is that the last on the term?
So it is continual, is how I take it, unless we initiate a contract. It's not really a contract, it's a sunset always with Civic Plus, is how I read it. So it's indefinite unless we make a decision to move away from Civic Plus.
Yeah, if we discontinue the hosting fee, and then there's another small fee, if I remember correctly. But otherwise, it's included.
As long as we're hosting, we get the question on our page.
Yep.
Any questions or comments on that? That's it. Well, information, or yeah, information. Admin 2022-17 fiscal year 2023 insurance renewals.
Yeah, so Rob's got a nice memo in the packet about our renewals. Is somebody from Alliant going to join us? Do you know? Or?
You already go to council.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, so the memo is in the packet. We do recommend staying with Blue Cross Blue Shield again. We do always raise every year what the renewals are for the competitors. In this case, it was United that was the second cheapest or the best alternative option. And, you know, every few years when we look at that and we get a full pricing, we always kind of weigh out the relative merits of a change and the disruption on employees and the relative benefits provided between the two, and then make a recommendation. We did settle on renewing with BCBS, even though they are up 6.85%, I believe, or 6 point something. Okay. And that is less than our 8% budget number. So, you know, we've always kind of said as long as the renewals are reasonable and we can afford them, you know, the employees I know do appreciate being with Blue Cross Blue Shield, prefer their, you know, I think it's best in state health insurance coverage. We have a pretty rich benefit plan that the employees appreciate. And so that's the staff recommendation. We can tweak things here and there, and we have in years past changed prescription, you know, card amounts or benefit levels. In this case, because the renewal is within budget, we chose not to do any of that. Typically, those years when we've reduced benefits marginally, it's been because we've seen 20 or 30% increases year over year. So, as in years past, we do recommend tailoring the dental and then the, is it life insurance? To BCBS carriers so that we get the discount. So that recommendation remains. And then, you know, that's all part of the renewal package for the health. So on the employee contribution side, the unions do have locked in a 12 and 17% employee contribution. If they do not do an annual physical, if they do an annual physical, they get the same 10.5%, 12.5% that the employees get. We recommend leaving the 10.5, 12.5 for non-union employees in place for now. And we do propose to bring in an employee manual amendment next month that will require physicals for non-union employees too. That way everybody's on the same page. Hopefully we're catching health issues before they get worse, minimizing our costs and improving our employees' health. So with that, Rob, I don't know if there's anything I missed that you wanted to share.
No.
Insurance companies don't require the yearly wellness checks.
Yeah.
I had to do it when my wife was with the county, so
yep.
It was Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Yep. So the county was actually where we got the idea to do this. So John had, you know, brought that over and said, hey, we should do this in the union contracts, and that was as a result of a conversation they had several years ago.
Yeah. And I think that was after they switched back from United Health Blue Cross Blue Shield for all the problems the county had with United Health.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that the city had United in the late 90s and early 2000s and got away from them because they had some employees with some really bad claims processing issues. So
we could switch to Blue Cross Blue Shield. We were with City.
Oh, okay.
And PBA out of Westmont was the third party administrator.
Yep.
Nothing would
change. Oh, yeah. Oof.
Any other questions or comments on that? That's good. We'll move that on to City Council consent. All right. Anybody has questions, they can pull up. Sounds good. Next item, Admin 2022-18, Facilities Manager Intergovernmental Agreement.
Yeah, so we're up for the intergovernmental agreement at the end of the calendar year, which requires notice by the end of June, whether we want to renew. We see merits in the position and sharing. Certainly, I think all of us that have worked on the Prairie Point project have seen Steve's value specifically as an individual, not necessarily as a shared service. So that's all kind of one and the same with this position. And, you know, obviously we're in the middle of that project, going to be spending a lot of time with him over the next year. Hopefully it's done by the end of the term. But then we're going to turn around and do it again, obviously, at the Public Works facility. So he has been, I think, the leader of the project, which has paid dividends in my mind to the city because he had led Oswego's project, and now he's doing it for Yorkville. So we're getting the return on that. And so we do recommend proceeding forward with it. So what we're asking for is just direction to proceed with negotiations with Oswego and to basically not notify them that we're going to terminate. And then we'll bring you back a formal intergovernmental agreement to approve in the next few months before the end of the term. He has not calculated them in a few months that I'm aware of because of COVID specifically. And I do plan on, both Oswego and us are planning on reconciling the purchasing manager and the facilities manager here in the next like 2-3 weeks. We've got a meeting scheduled. So that will be trued up basically and gone back. If I had to guess, in the past year, he's probably been 60 to 70% Yorkville, is my guess. So
that's what I'm like.
Yep.
This is a good position. But if we're approaching that 60-70%, when are we approaching generally a full-time status
yeah.
person?
Yep.
Knowing that at some point, Oswego is going to start pulling back
yeah.
for their needs.
Yep.
I mean, if they don't have brand new facilities, but they're newer, but they're at the age that they're going to need to use time.
Yeah.
Just like we're way beyond it, we certainly.
Yep.
So I want to make sure that we're not going to commit to something that I don't want to put us in a position that's unfavorable for that.
Yep.
2 years or more. I want to be forward looking on this position.
Yeah. I know the intent was to grow the shared service over time, and while Ted Milshewski, who's our maintenance worker two that we hired for building and grounds, doesn't work for Oswego technically, I think the thought was is that the management staff could continue to grow as necessary based on time constraints, so that you had a team of two or three people then overseeing, you know, both towns and hopefully achieving some sort of efficiency in doing so. So there aren't any proposals on our end or Oswego's end that I'm aware of to expand yet, but I know that the comment has been made between me and Dan when we've talked about this, is that, you know, there is easily more than 2,000 hours worth of work, you know, probably double that at least, for management people just to track things and do the bidding and all the purchasing and planning. I mean, it's a very labor-intensive position that, you know, is, you know, sometimes called out on demand too, so when something goes wrong. So, yeah, so I don't know that they are interested in pulling him back. They haven't mentioned that at all, but I would anticipate that, you know, I think both of us have seen the need without hiccup for this position, you know, over the past few years.
It could be such that another Ted type of person,
yep.
but with more office experience, kind of bridge between.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe at the management, you have a true skill academy, you have a hybrid. That way, maybe we're not bringing another management
yeah.
level. Our needs are continuing to grow with facilities as we update.
Yep.
Okay.
Just have one quick question. How long is this break going to be that same amount as the previous one?
That'll be one of the points of negotiation. I would assume that our standard would probably be just for another 5 years. Functionally, the agreements are, you know, kind of month to month, because any one of us can kind of terminate them really at any time. It's just how often you have to come back in front of the boards. So that would be a point of discussion.
That was kind of my question. More beneficial to do a shorter term lock-in agreement and then go kind of year to year from that.
Maybe.
Give you some flexibility.
Yeah, maybe. So, something to look at.
I think we originally talked about that as why 5 year. You know, it's more to make a secure long term
yes.
position and not have someone that's only here for 1 or 2 years. Because the shorter term you put out there,
yep.
Less qualified you might get on a person. I think that was
you're right, that was a component of it. Yep.
Trust me, 5 years is a long time to commit to
going forward.
Yeah.
But as a new position, it was definitely a concern that we were going to attract a candidate. Yep.
Yeah, maybe now it's a consideration number 3, but we'll discuss this later.
Yep.
Another direction for you?
It does, yeah. I would ask that we take this to City Council and just have a vote, you know, basically for them to tell us to proceed. So.
We could put it on consent. No, let's put it on regular agenda. Thank you. Add in 2022-19 ordinance amending water service rates and sewer maintenance fees. And the purpose is this has to do with budget discussion. So this and the next couple items, it's all budget related.
Yep.
I don't know if you want to just roll right into the individual, or you want to kind of talk about it as a whole. We can do it all together. If you want to give kind of a highlight.
Sure.
And we'll just hold it into a budget conversation.
Yeah. So both of the agenda items reflect exactly what's in the budget proposal. So just as a recap, the water rates, which haven't been touched in since 2016, we're proposing to take from a $17 base rate bi-monthly with a $4.30 volumetric rate. So that's every 100 gallons or every 100 cubic feet after 350 cubic feet to make it more complex probably than it needed to be. but changing those numbers to 24 and 480. So just as a general reminder, and we went through this probably 10 or 15 years ago when we first adjusted the rates for some capital issues that popped up. Anything you do to the base rate is primarily going to impact residential properties because everybody pays it equally, and residences are, you know, smaller users than the large commercial entity would be. And anything you do to the volumetric rate is going to impact businesses disproportionately. So in the past when we've done this, that's why we've tried to adjust both at the same time. And so that's the general guideline. We do have a spreadsheet that in a future meeting or with some feedback given, you know, we can show you how you, as you change things over the years, how that impacts not only individual users and groups of accounts and groups of users, but, you know, where the bell curve of accounts basically falls. So, you know, there's some statements made in the budget document in this memo that, you know, if you accept the proposal as is, that 91% of the houses in town are going to pay less than $10 a month on average for this interim rate on an annualized basis. And, you know, so we can calculate those things with relative ease going forward, depending on how you want to do it. The numbers that were proposed specifically for the water rates and the sewer rates, the sewer is an inflationary measure only. We haven't touched the sewer rates in several years, too. So we wanted to get that moving so that there's a long-term sustainable revenue source for the sewer fund so that there's not a question of us being able to do sewer projects in the future. So that one is incremental in nature, not necessarily tied to a project per se as much as it is just the entire capital plan. But the water is basically tied to Lake Michigan. That's the reason why we proposed it. And it is, you know, basically one step, as the mayor had said in previous meetings, it's an interim step basically to a larger increase, obviously a few years down the road, which is a larger discussion. So in light of it being an interim step, his initial proposal was to phase in the two water rate changes. So the base rate doing more immediately, like a September 1, I think is what we put in the budget memo, and then do a January 1 volumetric change. But all that can be changed. Obviously, that was just, you know, we wanted to give you guys a chance to vote on it, or to discuss it, to vote on it, for us to communicate it, you know, because there's a broader narrative, especially on the water rates, that needs to be told. It's not just, you know, water rates are going up, or we're doing a project. It's, you know, you're changing basically the entire water system from the inside out, and spending, you know, 2.5 times what we normally do in an entire budget, you know, in the course of a 5-year period on top of what we normally spend. So that's the gist of the sewer and the water. The second agenda item for the infrastructure fees are exactly the infrastructure fees that have been in place for several years prior. We're not proposing to change those. We're not doing an inflationary increase on those. I think the intent would be long term, and we've talked about this, to probably fold those into the broader water rates at some point or another so that the bill is a little bit more condensed once we know what we're doing with Lake Michigan overall. But that's ultimately a decision for you to make too. So those are the proposals. So you've got one ordinance that covers the water and sewer rate proposals, and then the ordinance that's got the infrastructure fees is a separate agenda item too. That infrastructure fee, as it has been in the past, is a 1-year sunset renewal, so that has to be renewed every year as well. I think that was everything.
That's a good point for discussion on these. The increase of fees, we've all pretty much said they're going to be necessary at some point. You know, I don't think we can avoid it otherwise. We're not going to pay for more projects. So
yep.
That's what I kind of want to talk about. That one is how we implement it. And then the other one, the wind frame sinks, our infrastructures. If we can combine at some point later, it's good. I want to keep that separate right now because they do have a sunset clause on it. I don't know about you guys, but I've taken flack on the fee increases as they've been published. The $17 to $24 increase in the user rates going up. Most people just look at the wages rates or gas, I guess that's a whole different issue. Our coverage rates and our water, so it's very sensitive for people right now about the increase.
how much we're anticipating on that revenue increase. And that's what you were alluding to with the chart.
Yeah.
As to how that's being done. That's on the back of your efficiency. If you push it off a little while,
yeah.
How much do we potentially lose
yeah.
revenue? And we, how much would it
sure. affect us? We should be able to pull up that figure relatively easily, Rob? Relatively
yeah, I mean,
quickly?
Yeah, if we increase it to 24 on an annualized basis, we generate about 316,000 more.
316?
316.
Okay, 316. Okay.
So about $53,000 each billing cycle.
And so we're proposing to skip two billing cycles, right?
Yeah.
So
about two-thirds, I think.
Okay, so $200,000 or so basically is what we've got budgeted for fiscal year 23, but it's a $316,000 annualized hit.
And then on the volumetric side, increasing it from 430 to 480 on an annualized basis would generate about $300,000 per year. So you divide that by six, and it's about $50,000 initially each month. And again, that's based on the current amount of accounts we have now, obviously.
Yep. Yeah, so that'll be part of the broader discussion on Lake Michigan timing. From the numbers that I've seen preliminarily, we put in the $500,000 or so into the fiscal year 23 budget column for the studies and some of the governance issues. So that will hit in fiscal year 23. And then fiscal year 24, it was, a few million dollars is what we could see before it kicks up to, what are you doing with the broader project in fiscal year 25? I mean, it is really that soon, at least as far as expenditure timing. And so that the broader discussion is like, let's say there's 20 line items of things that are included everywhere from engineering studies to like, you've got to replace a pressure reducing valve on the south end of town. Like, when you switch over and close off like all these other units or whatever. So, and then you got everything in between. You got to build a pipe, you got to build the towers, you got to build, decommission the treatment plants, et cetera. So most of that is going to occur in this, 5-year window. And so, are we getting federal funds, state funds, are they grants or loans? What is the debt service on those? That is all going to help to push off some of that, but we don't have any of that quantified yet because we're still working through some of that. So the justification behind the interim step politically, just with the city council having the discussion, and then from a recommendation standpoint, is just we took EEI's number that figured at the end of the day, that it was going to have to, the bill was going to have to go up like $45 a month per person, in order to pay for it. And we said, let's take a chunk out of that now and then talk about the broader project and, go from there. So, I don't know if that's a 5% step towards the ultimate base rate, if it's a 35% step, because that all depends on, if we get funding and what the, the loans are. So so that was the justification and kind of the thought process behind it.
Thoughts on that?
They're going up.
They're going up, and it's just unfortunate. We're in a bad time to be pushing more rates.
Are there any rates that we can scale back? Like the infrastructure fee, the $8 per month for the road and better roads. How much money did Yorkville get additionally from the motor fuel tax when the state raised their rate?
Yeah.
So the city has gotten more money.
Of course.
Because of that. And how much, is there a way that you can look to see state motor fuel tax went up this much and you can maybe take it off of that road infrastructure fee?
Yeah, I mean, those figures are known, and you can definitely do that. Just in the concept of budgeting, we've got a five-year budget proposal where we assume the infrastructure fee is in place for all 5 years, and then the motor fuel tax is in place for all 5 years. So if you change course on that, as is your right, you know, we would have to talk about scaling back or eliminating some of the projects in order to do it. So there's not really a lot of, you know, elasticity there between, like, being able to do things and then a reduction in revenue.
One thing I walked out of our last meeting was we're able to do every project we want to do and still be financially sound. That is the first time I've ever been in that position coming out of a budget meeting.
In 12 years.
That we've done every project we can at this and we're able to do it financially.
Yeah.
Every trail, every road, every sidewalk, every floor, vehicle. It actually was a little unsettling that we're throwing that much money into the budget, and I know we've had a lot of different things that have happened. Motor fuel's big, our sales tax, federal government money, state. We've had all kinds of revenue streams that have changed over the past couple years. And to the good of the fact that we have a budget that allows us to do an awful lot, but it also puts me in a position to be concerned about that.
Yeah, let me add some nuance to that. Water and sewer, for sure, there's a capital improvement plan that you guys have reviewed, and almost all of that is funded. Lake Michigan obviously isn't. And then there's some other, like, minor things that, you know, it's like beyond a five-year time frame. That statement on vehicles, playgrounds, sidewalks, striping, other things, is not a, like, a full picture of, like, we know what the annual spend should be and we're spending it, otherwise we're going to get behind the eight ball. Like, the amount of deferred maintenance that we're still doing on buildings, roads to a certain extent, but I think we're within basically eyesight of, like, fully funding that on an annual basis. Sidewalks, we have no idea what the annual cost should be to replace it. I mean, it could be like millions of dollars a year. We just don't know. We haven't calculated it yet. It's very hard to do so. Trails, playgrounds, we did fully fund. So that one is planned out. And a couple other things. So my hope was, and I'm either this year or next year's budget proposal, like, to that concept, is similar to how we do our vehicle replacement plan, to kind of show what those annual targets should be, similar to the road program too. We know that we should spend $2 million so that you have, like, a very clear idea of all these infrastructure obligations that we have and how close we are to, like, funding them ideally. And then you can kind of pare back and say, like, well, we don't want to fund this one ideally because of whatever reason, you know, budget or project related deferrals, and get there. So it is without a doubt the best five-year budget that I've been a part of. It's been the best budget that I've seen since I've worked here. I think we're in the best position financially in, you know, decades. But, you know, there are, you know, it's still a long road basically to being able to say, like, some of the North Shore communities or some of the communities that have large sales tax bases, to be able to say, like, we're good with what we do, we're going to maintain, we need to scale back, we need to find efficiencies. It's still very much, like, on the climb to growth. So.
And that's it with our newfound, you know, the gas tax. The motor fuel is 44%, because that allows us to do a lot more road and other projects. But when we talk about our enterprise funds, water, sewer, those are very healthy, those are funded, those are what we're talking about with the water and sewer bills. That money comes in, it only comes in for the purpose of those projects. I mean, we're not transferring. Correct me if I'm wrong, but we cannot transfer to other funds because those are enterprise and they're solely dedicated to those projects. And so whatever fees we generate, we have to expend those. So we should only be bringing in what we need to do our projects, and that's where increasing the rates and the fees pay for those projects solely. Unless we at some point go to the bottom, but then those revenues still go to that project. So it's just, we've got a lot to be thinking about. It's good to know that we are already on par with our road infrastructure.
Yep.
And we might shoot for that $2 million target, but
15 years, basically. Yeah.
The fact of the matter is that $2 million keeps increasing because we take on more roads and the cost of it actually is increased every year.
Yep.
So, really, I don't know what the updated $2 million will be after
four and a half.
Right. Well, right. And we actually looked at that. We had that 2 million in our head, but yeah. I think it's more than that. But it's all those kind of things. What we've been deficient on maintenance across the board. And I know that's hurting us. So it's just, we don't have a big sales tax, or a big tax generation other than property tax. That's what we start. And so it goes on the backs of the tax. I have a good solution, but if we could just defer or push off a little bit, maybe just spread it out, that would be my own recommendation. You know what's going to happen? But it's one of those that public has to can't work with it. Is it one where you get more balance, or it's too high, or fees too high for people? And we do have the highest property tax rates already, then we tap down the rest of our taxes.
Tribune's got a couple databases on that.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Actually, I just lost my train of thought. What were we talking about right before that? It was tax base rate. I don't know, it'll come to me in a second. At last night's Public Works Committee meeting, Ken had asked about the transfer tax proposal that Oswego has discussed. So I will probably include Oswego's packet materials in next week's City Council agenda, give you an overview of what they're doing. But the gist of it is, you know, when you sell a house or sell a piece of property, you know, you pay a tax on the percentage of the total sale value. And, you know, for towns, it's, you know, a couple bucks per $1,000 EAV or, you know, whatever it is. And it can generate hundreds of thousands of dollars, or I think Oswego had estimated it'd be $1 million. Realtors hate it. People who sell their homes hate it. That's typically actually the main rallying cry against home rule authority, even though a home rule community can't do it. You still have to do it by referendum. And so that's what Oswego's looking at. They're looking at, you know, basically discussing this, putting it on a referendum, and the voters would have to decide. But their whole justification is, you know, do you want to pay for it in this way, which is theoretically coming from people who are moving into the community, versus, you know, a water rate increase, which kind of hits everybody that's in the community already. So there are some nuances there and exemptions and stuff that we can talk about, but that's the, you know, one of the concepts being thrown out by the region. So. The comments last night were, you know, oh, that's an interesting comment or concept. I don't know if it's going to fly. And I think everybody, so there was three aldermen here, and they kind of just said, like, well, let's wait and see what happens on Oswego before we talk about it. So.
Are there going to be the guinea pigs?
Yeah, I mean, the concept of the swap has been done successfully here. That's what we did, you know, years ago. It was sales taxes versus property taxes when we were going to default on bonds, basically. And the community voted for the sales tax, you know, instead of having the property taxes remain as high as they were.
But
so
the sales tax can be burdened by people who don't live in the community.
Absolutely, yes. And it's discretionary, too. If you don't want to pay for it, you can go shop outside the community. Yep. Yeah. So
it's a burden here, because I guess the question of who pays that tax is it buyer or seller obligation? Is that something that's stipulated within?
I would say.
Yeah, it's in there. Yeah, it's defined. I just don't know which one. I haven't.
Yeah, the buyer, because the seller's been paying for these services and infrastructures since owning the house. Here comes someone who's never lived here.
Doesn't mean you're not moving from the north side to south side. You're still within the community, but if
well, Oswego was going to have an exemption to that. Like, if you move within the community,
right,
you don't have to do it. You're not.
That's an exemption or a rebate usually.
Yeah. But if you're going to move from Lombard to Oswego, maybe you should bear a little burden of, you know, the cost of having DuPage County water, where they have it in Lombard already, brought out to where they don't.
There it is.
It's an interesting concept. We will take a lot of flack from the Oswego and Oswego from the realtors. That would definitely be an organization that's going to come out against it, which, as long as they get their information right this time, and they try to come against it.
They'll still get their commission.
Oh yeah, they're not worried about it.
I'm beginning to learn what our lesson already even know what you're saying. People are going to take us.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter which side you're at.
Half the population is going to be against it.
Both. That tells me though, if you're doing an efficient job and half the people like it, half the people don't, then it's your...
Rather than 100%?
Good. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, if there's ever a consensus, you're probably not too
best enough. So I pulled up Oswego's materials. Most of them are seller pays it. Some of them are buyer pays it. The rate is anywhere from $1.50 per $1,000 of value up to, there's one of them that's $750. Yep, Bowling Brook's at $750. And so the projected revenue for these towns, you know, this is everything from Sycamore all the way up to Naperville. Naperville, Bowling Brook, and Joliet generate about $4 million in annual taxes. Aurora at $3 million. And all these other towns are, you know, 400, 500, 600, 700, 800. And there are exemptions in there. So
somewhere along the lines of car size, 25,000, is probably a couple hundred to 300,000.
Depending on the dollar proposal you threw in there, I mean, it wouldn't be unreasonable to expect a few hundred thousand dollars. So I don't know if Oswego put in an exact proposal as much as they were surveying. Let's see here. The staff memo was $3 per thousand of value. So.
And that was $1 million in revenue, right?
Yes.
That's what I read.
Yep.
Theoretically, it doesn't sound horrible as long as you're not the one buying the house, I suppose.
Right, if you're not
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of people get sticker shock with that one.
Yeah, if when they get their closing statements.
Yeah, if they've not been invited, they're going to get sticker shock. Yeah.
What's this for? What's this for? The government.
Would that be bad? Average in Yorkville right now, probably 325.
Yeah.
What would be, if we do, say we do...
$2.
$2, yeah.
Less than Oswego's, less than Naperville's, not $7.
Not as cheap as the one...
What's that?
Per $1,000 of value, so it doesn't say EAV specifically, so I'm assuming it's fair market value.
Right, it would be based on the final sale price.
Yeah, so $2 for every $1,000. Yeah, it'd be like $650 on $300.
So $3 would be about $1,000. I mean, the towns that are doing this, that have implemented it, Woodridge, Bartlett, Romeoville, Sycamore, Addison, Carroll Stream, Milk Grove Village, Glen Ellen, Streamwood, Park Ridge, Elmhurst, Aurora, Wheaton, Naperville, Bolingbrook, Joliet. And that's not a, you know, an on-off sampling or anything that you specifically chose those communities because I'm sure they're comparable.
There's more that are doing.
Yeah, I mean, it is relatively common east of us, but, you know, not so common recently just because it's such a high hurdle to get over.
Because it has to be referendum.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be, it'll be a tough sell.
Yeah.
You know? You can only implement that once you reach one of those states.
No, you can implement it as a non-home rule unit, too. It's just...
referendum, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it used to be one of the things that a home rule unit would almost immediately do when they became home rule, and so the realtors and everybody else changed the law so that it requires a referendum, whether you're home rule or not. Right. Correct.
It's an option to have on the table. And that's what we're looking for.
Yeah.
Anything we can do to protect the property taxes and keep them lower. I'm always inclined to keep it as a fee-based system. If you use something, you pay for it. That's really, I prefer our fees to be that way. That's why I was so in favor of the sales tax. Because buying something, it's about it, and it spreads it out.
Right.
Property tax, it's burdensome for us. But we can find ways of doing it that way. Generally, they favor of it, we can get support for it. So how can it mitigate other things that we have coming online? So.
What do you guys need a decision for these rates? You want it on the city council agenda for Tuesday?
Yeah, I mean, it's based on your comfort level. You know, theoretically, if we're approving the budget by the end of April, you'd want those rates to be in place sooner rather than later so that we can implement them with enough time to communicate them. But legally and effectively with, you know, the way that the bills hit, I mean, you could do it probably in June.
July.
But, yeah, I mean, the budget has to be approved by the end of April. So.
Unless we, if we chose to delay them from the September and the January dates that are in the budget, respectively.
The sunset dates.
No, the sunset dates are for the infrastructure fees, okay. Those three. Those just need to be done before, like, that coincides with the budget.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry. Thanks for that clarification. The infrastructure fees do need to be approved by the end of April in order for them to be applied. Yes.
Directly to the 1 year term of the budget.
But the actual rate increases.
The rate increases of September 22 and January 23 for the two different, for the base rate and the user rate. Those we can set after. And if we wanted to defer those, that buys us more time. We just have to be able to have it in place to actually incorporate.
Yeah, the sewer rate increase for inflationary is proposed to be a May 1 start. That one's like, I think, 70 cents or something, you know, per billing cycle.
Yeah, so if we chose to, that's the only one that's immediate to have budget. If we chose to push that off, we need to know that. Well, not by Tuesday, but by
sure.
Well, yeah, you'd have to have either a managerial decision or a city council decision to defer or delay projects so that you didn't impact your cash flow.
Right.
You want to know if there's a relative difference in water usage between a senior household and a... Yes, we can. We can randomly sample and calculate that. Effectively, okay, so let me map this out. If your base was more volumetric in nature, you would better be able to give a discount to anyone that used less water, because it would be you pay for what you use. So when you have a higher base rate, which we do, because we have fixed costs with debt service and projects, that does tend to impact seniors more so than a residential household, because, you know, they're at a base rate, they're probably never going to go above that base rate, so anytime you change it. So I'm not aware of anybody that does a senior rate specifically, where it's like seniors only pay, you know, whatever dollar amount, it's less than what everybody else pays, like they do on garbage, because water is, I think, a little different. But there are different ways that you can kind of arrive to that same conclusion. And I know we had looked at that, you know, years ago, under the context of not necessarily like the difference between a senior household and a regular household as much as it was what is going to be the monthly impact on a senior on a fixed income who, you know, doesn't use much water. And so I know that in one or two of the water rate changes that we had done, we had actually scaled back the proposed amount of the base rate increase so that it was less of an increase for people on a fixed income.
Because I know there are households, a traditional household, that will not hit the threshold to go into the higher user rate. They just don't get it. They don't use that much. They're conservative. I'm sure there are some senior households that do use more than they have irrigation.
Right. Yes.
But we have, we know what their actual volume is because of the way we pull the bills every month.
Yes.
Maybe there is a way to just take ahead and find a way.
We don't know necessarily every household that has a senior because we don't tie in census data to that, but if somebody has given us registration for a garbage discount, that would be, we would have a limited sampling of people.
Right. Yeah. And that's right, maybe it's 20 or 30 on your side.
Sure.
Because we do have limited data, I know that, but maybe it's something that's, the data becomes larger, the larger data set that we chose to
move. Yeah.
Have you thought about raising the rate of water usage after the threshold, kind of as an incentive for people to not be wasteful with their water? If, you know, most people are going to reach that, what's the 350 cubic feet per month?
Yeah.
I'd probably reach that in a week.
Yeah.
But then, you know, if you make it up to 750, you're going to pay a little bit more.
Yeah.
If you make it up to 1,000, you're going to pay a little bit more. So maybe a gradual.
Now, one thing that I think about too is when we talk about water use, water waste, poor water reuse, we don't have the ability to track wastewater volume. Our wastewater is based on the volume you pull from the system. But if you think about anyone, I have a pool, I don't have an irrigation, but those who have those types of uses, that water's not going back in.
Staying in the ground.
Yeah, it just goes into the ground, so it's actually, there's a difference of how that water is going through. It's not impacting the wastewater treatment center.
There are various places, like in Fox Metro, if you're going to fill your pool, you notify Fox Metro, they adjust your bill accordingly based on what your average has been.
Yeah, so and that would be, if someone has an irrigation system or a pool, and you're going to do that, those are the kind of things that, should that have an offset on how much, you know, the water, you know, results of the sanitary district is charging you? Possibly. You know, because obviously there's a base fee we pay for that, and then we have the user fee for sewer. Now that sewer fee comes to us.
Some of it goes to the sanitary district. We did used to do offsets probably 20 or 30 years ago, and I know that they had discontinued them because it was so difficult to track and administer. So, and effectively, what you're talking about is a revenue reduction there. So, I know that they were less inclined to permit that in the future. So,
you know, Fox Metro requires a minimum of 30 days notice prior to you filling your pool, so they can
to get the offset.
So they can kind of see what your account is and flag it, and then based on how much you use, they'll make your bill like an average of your last 4 or 5.
Bills
to offset for that.
They don't know if you're one big bill.
Right, but there are people that will fill their pools and then freak out and, you know, when they come in later on, it's like, well, read your agreement. It's on the website.
My recollection, too, is when they had gotten rid of it, and I'm reading minutes, I wasn't at any of these minutes, or meetings, was that there was less of a concern about the impact to pool owners, et cetera, going forward, just because I think the comment was made, like, if you have a pool, you should be able to afford the water, you know, versus, like, you know, so I... For whatever that's worth, relaying information from 30 years ago that an alderman said, but yeah.
Now, so,
well, yeah, I mean, billing issues and, you know, usage inequity is a, yeah.
That they did. So, you know, we have a flat fee with the sanitary district in that aspect. Is there any ability to change that from flat fee to a use fee, just in general? I mean, have they contemplated, if we had a discussion in the past 20 years on that, just looking at a different...
The sanitary district?
Yes.
I've had multiple conversations personally with various directors and board members over the years, and they are not inclined to change their rate structure or reduce it based on their projected plans for construction. Their existing funding sources, and you know, that's, they don't have a property tax, and so that's what they've said. That's their sole revenue stream for the most part, and it's stable, and it allows them to plan for future growth.
It is. It's just, it's not an equitable system.
It's very rigid.
It is. It doesn't bill you for what you use and what your burden is on the system. You're being taxed. They need flat fee regardless of size of units or your use. And it's always been a problem. I mean, I would love to have that discussion with them to try and make it more equitable. Even if incrementally we put it out there, it's a little bit higher, it's more fair for the general public.
Yeah.
And I would love to have that discussion to try and get them on board with that. People are not nice when they get their bills, especially with people like, I mean, we got a lot of line items, wires, and they just, and they're, they've been in their house for 15 years or so, let's say, talking about the same structure of bills. So that's something. And the last one I want to bring up is water meters. Changing out the meters to a digital system. My understanding is that if you change out the meters, they're going to be much more accurate. They're going to capture the billing. And typically, for the cost that you have to implement for putting it in place, you're going to recapture that and then some because they're actually capturing the true rate. I've been told that as your meters age, the actual accuracy decreases and you lose revenue.
Mechanics of it, where's
yeah. So it's like a 20 to 30% loss in some cases, and it can happen as soon as 15 years. So, and that was one of the reasons why we proposed to replace some of them. We have looked at a broader replacement, and there have been towns that have done different contracts and replacement measures solely basically to shore up revenue and then to pay costs because people use less water. And so fixed costs over time for, you know, a water system, that can be an issue, and so that they've done that. We haven't had that here because of growth yet, but you know, that's another fairness equity issue. It's like, you know, is it fair for somebody to move in and basically, you know, have to pay the full cost of water versus somebody that's lived here for 30 years and maybe they're paying 60% of what they're actually using?
Because if that meter is that age, then it's not working to the best of its capacity.
I'll be right back.
You're losing that revenue, but it's, again, it's a non-equitable system. So. And I hate to say it, I'm probably benefiting from it on an 18-year-old house.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, kind of a double-edged sword there. I want to make sure we're fair cost, but this is on the city side. I don't want to make sure that we're getting what we can for it to be fair.
Would replacing the meters be part of the efficiency? That the city has to reach for Lake Michigan water? Does anyone know?
Yes.
Would it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Because there's got, what's the threshold that they have to meet?
It needs to be under 10% or less, I think. That sounds about right.
Then replacing the meters would assist in that.
Correct, yeah. And that's why over the years we've been doing so much of our sanitary lining.
It's only like 12 or 13%.
And we've got that down quite a bit.
Yeah, we have. By a few percentage points. Ours was never as high as some of the older communities because all of our, most of our mains are new, you know, 20 years old or less. The threshold for Lake Michigan water loss is 10%. So we're only, you know, we're stone's throw.
You're right.
Yep. Uses,
oh,
and
See, ag doesn't get touched though.
Yeah.
It's the sanitary districts that are being the ones blamed for it. So every product you use, dish soap, laundry soap, hair soap, all has high amounts of phosphorus in it. So they're being mandated within the next 20 years to get to a certain level that's basically causing you to redesign the whole entire way of doing things. So the cost of construction and everything. Flash Metro, I mean, we're way ahead of the curve. Our permit says we have to be, I don't remember exactly what the numbers are, but by in the next 20 years, we have to be at a certain limit. We're meeting that limit already by things that we've done, but we have a greater revenue source for amount of years that we have versus YDSD. So YDSD, we were just talking about their meeting Tuesday, their phosphorus levels, they're right at what their permit levels are, but as the population increases, they're going to have to do some different things on the way they treat. So they've got a lot of capital projects coming up.
And is it either going to be reducing that number? So they're not going to reduce it, but we're going to have it. So
they're meeting their permit level now for the next 10 years. Who knows what the IPA is, but then they might try to reduce it lower. So, but where they're at now, just meeting it now, but once you start to add more and more users, your flow increases, they're going to have to do some different things to change things up.
If I could segue on that topic, so that is actually, that specific issue is something that we usually talk about at the Metro West legislative drive down with either IEPA or IDPH. So Pete Waller from EEI will usually lead a robust discussion on how it's way more expensive to take up whatever the metric, it's like a pound of phosphorus per whatever acre or whatever, you know, out of the like ecosystem through a sanitary district than it is to just like ask farmers to use like different fertilizer or something like
yeah.
The costs are astronomically higher.
So they can use
so
much ag lime and phosphorus as they want and leaches into their drainage systems, which leach into the creek, which leach into the river. They don't touch the poor farmers, but it's the sanitary districts that are being hammered hard.
Yeah.
Better lobbyists.
Well, yeah, it's an inequitable and inefficient way to address the situation. You know, you're having sanitary districts spend millions of dollars to do this, or municipalities in some cases, and, you know, you probably could better target it elsewhere. So that is something that's, yeah, we've talked about previously. So.
All performance, all challenges. It brings up the challenge of having multiple taxing bodies within our municipal limits.
Yep.
So, any other thoughts? Otherwise, I mean, we're talking all three items, so budget in general, any thoughts on that as well? I mean, we've got lots of maintenance issues within that budget we're talking.
Yep.
Install that sidewalk.
Yep.
So there's different things like that there, but obviously the sidewalk replacements are huge. Brought on 7 miles of new trails recently. I mean, that's going to be hitting us all pretty well here, so. So I think we have paving equipment to maintain those. One thing I thought about when I talked to Barb and I talked to Eric about it is plowing some of the primary trails right now. You know, this winter was a test for how many people are actually still on the trails on the 34th of Kennedy in the winter while they're covering. Other communities do it with park districts, but the municipalities haven't been something we don't go down and shovel downtown either. Oswego, they actually contract someone to go remove all some of the downtown walks. You know, it's not in private, but thanks to the operation, it's done by the municipality. So things like that, whether we can plow some of those primary trails, it'd be nice if we could work some of that in. Maybe we have to pour hose. But those are kind of things that would mind us thinking about. So, you know, it's going to be a push shove on what we can do with our budget. Yeah, trails, I'd like them to be more useful, especially in the winter times when people do want to get around. Say about anything else on those ones? So we have, just for the sake of the agenda for council, the first one, 2022-19, that's the water service rates and sewer maintenance fees. We'll just continue that discussion at council. So if I go on to the agenda.
We'll put that on the regular agenda for discussion. Okay.
2022-20 water sewer road infrastructure renewal. I don't see any objection to that. So that one I'm going to recommend is just going to go on consensus or recommendation.
Okay.
I don't see us changing that. And then obviously the budget proposal is discussion. With that, does anybody have, well, we have an old business, anyone have additional business? All right, 7:03, we can adjourn.
Thank you.
Thank you for the discussion, everybody. I will say, I like to make some budget talks. Say, we're going to put your
the what?
Budget talks in committee.
Oh, yeah.
It's, okay. 2 miles a little bit.